The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
Listening to Check It Out at Te Haata, and this is the local history edition of our Invercargill City Library show, I Ngā Wā o Mua.
We will introduce you to local history through chats with our local historians and share some interesting and surprising stories we discover along the way.
Kia ora and welcome to this local history edition of Check It Out at Te Haata, I Ngā Wā o Mua. I'm your host, Senga White, and today Wendy MacArthur and I are going to be talking about the history of Queen's Park. So, hello Wendy, and it's lovely to have you joining me again.
Thank you.
I think it's fair to say that residents and visitors alike love our park, and in February this year it was actually announced that Queen's Park had been voted the Kiwi's Choice winner in the Keep New Zealand Beautiful Awards. But the park dates back to the very beginning of Invercargill as a city. John Turnbull Thompson, Invercargill's surveyor, put aside 81 hectares or 200 acres when he laid out the town in 1857. It was originally covered in a native podocarp swamp forest, and in those early decades it was used for all manner of things. So there were cattle grazing there, there was dog trialling, there was even a racetrack. But the first formal plantings didn't happen till about the 1870s. So Wendy, tell us how Queen's Park came to be called Queen's Park.
Well, John Turnbull Thompson actually grew up in the borders area of Scotland, but he went to university in Edinburgh, and he named our park after the Queen's Park, which is now called the Royal Park, in the centre of Edinburgh. Later, it formally became called Victoria Park, but then the Borough Council officially adopted the name of Queen's Park in 1897 on the occasion of the 60th anniversary of coming to the throne of Queen Victoria. So our park is named after Queen's Park or the Royal Park in the centre of Edinburgh.
The big map we've got of the centre part, which has the park right in the middle of that map, which dates back from about, I think, 1926, that is in the archives, it calls, on that map, it actually calls it Victoria Park.
So, yes.
Yeah.
And in the council files, there are lots of correspondence, you know, around from the town clerk and various others to staff at Queen's Park, reminding them that the park is not called Victoria Park, but it's officially called Queen's Park. But right into the 1930s, staff were still calling it Victoria Park.
Yes, so it's quite a conversation starter, I think, for people.
And that was actually the name of Anderson's Park. So Anderson's Park, when Robert Anderson built on that land, it was called Victoria Park. And we sort of had a problem because we had two Victoria Parks.
So I mentioned that there was a race course at Queen's Park there in the early days. But what other recreational activities happened in and around the park in those first few decades?
Well, the AMP showgrounds were there for a time. So Otapuni Gardens were the main gardens, and Queen's Park was used, you know, for all these other things and grazing. And they decided to divide it into 10-acre sections. The Borough Council divided it into 10-acre sections, which they leased out. And a Mr. McInerney had a 10-acre section leased, and he sublet it to the AMP Society to use as a showgrounds. In 1913, they were transferred to what we knew as the showgrounds down Victoria Avenue. There was a bit of argument, you know, sort of about with the borough council about using council reserves for a showground, but it was recognised that it brought money to town and it brought people to town, the AMP show.
Indeed, yeah. Yes, that's right. But of course there were other other sports that used the area.
Yes, so we had several sports clubs, athletics clubs they were called, and there was the Irish Athletics, there was the Amateur Athletics Society and the Caledonian Athletics Society, and they all had big annual sports events which, you know, a lot of the local men entered into each, all the different ones, competitions, wood chopping, all those sort of big sporting events were happening at Queen's Park. There was tennis and, of course, the cricket grounds and a bowling club, all those things.
Yeah, there was a croquet club.
Yes,
too.
And a croquet, yes, that's yes. Right, mm. Yes. And then the Automobile Association, the Southland Automobile Association, set up a motor camp there.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me. I hadn't realised that.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So it was where the Blind Foundation have got their social rooms now and where the Stumpery is.
Mm.
And in 1946, it was actually extended to provide 60 sites for caravans. But eventually it was removed from there. When the council wanted to develop Queen's Park more as a botanical garden,
The park also contributed to the town water supply. So that I thought that was an interesting aspect of the early part.
Yes, so before we had the piped water from Branksome, the town water supply was sourced from up to 12 different bores, and four of those bores were in Queen's Park near where the animal sheds are.
And there's still the pump station there, isn't there?
Yes, on the Dune Street Reserve.
Mm.
I should have mentioned too earlier about our golf course.
Mm.
So we were the first borough in New Zealand to have a golf course, and that was in 1915. The golf course was developed at Queen's Park, and we were also the first borough to employ a golf coach.
Right.
So we were ahead of ourselves.
Trailblazing.
Yes, yes.
We've actually talked in previous episodes about the quite transformational contribution that Henry Feldwick made to the development of the park. But tell us about Henry Edgington and the contribution that he made to the park.
So Henry Edgington was appointed the Corporation Gardener in 1886, and he was there till 1919. We haven't had very many park directors or superintendents or head gardeners, as they were called, in our 150-year history. They did tend to stay for a good time, which has been good for the development of Queen's Park. So Henry Edgington came in 1886, and he gradually began developing and improving the park, and around 1914 he was able to establish the first rose garden, and the library archives have some lovely early coloured photos, postcards of the Henry Edgington rose gardens in Queen's Park, and he then followed that with the rhododendron planting.
And look, I walk through the park almost every day on my way to work, and the rose garden, the Henry Edgington rose garden, is looking particularly lovely at the moment.
Oh, that's nice to hear. Yeah. It was, once more, it was seen as one of the foremost rose gardens in New Zealand.
Yeah, it's quite spectacular. I think one of the most notable aspects of the park is when you enter through those wonderful Feldwick gates, is that beautiful avenue of trees leading down to the Band Rotunda. So tell us a little bit about how that was developed.
So that is actually called Coronation Avenue, that bend of trees in the pathway. And it was developed for the coronation of King George V in 1911. So that the government gave a very small subsidy for people to do coronation events. And John McGrew, a local man, gave quite a good amount as well. And then we got, the Borough Council got some donations. So between all of them, they were able to develop that beautiful Coronation Avenue.
It really is.
It is a lovely
walk. Spectacular.
It is.
We comment on the trees and just the beautiful variety and shades of greens.
Yes.
It's really lovely.
It's always changing.
Yeah.
With the seasons.
It is.
Yes.
And of course, at this time of the year, we're all looking forward to, you know, Christmas and carols by candlelight. You always think about that around the Band Rotunda as well. So this has actually been something that's been happening for a number of years now, hasn't it, Wendy?
Yes, yes. So the first carols in the park was in 1949, and we do have some information in council files on the carols by candlelight, the annual event, and I think we've got a couple of the early programs from the 1950s as well.
Mm.
It attracted huge crowds of people. Some years it was run by a men's group from the YMCA, who called themselves the Wise Men, but Y with Y, yes, which was a clever play on words.
Good pun.
And over the years, up until last year, the only event that had ever stopped carols in the park at Christmas was severe weather.
Mm.
And last year, for the first time, it was cancelled due to COVID.
Yeah, which is just a sign of the times, I think.
Yes, yes.
But actually, you know, we'll be looking forward to carols by candlelight again this year, which is great.
And it's always been around the Band Rotunda, which in itself is an attraction in the park.
It really is, yes.
So the Band Rotunda was developed after the First World War. Some of the members of the Dominion Band, they were actually disbanding, is the word you use, as a society, because so many of the men had been killed in the First World War, and they wanted to use their funds as a memorial. And so that they gave some money and the council made up the rest. E.R. Wilson, who designed the Feldwick Gates and the Civic Theatre and St. John's Church, the architect, he designed the Band Rotunda, and the plaque on it says, "To the memory of the bandsmen who fell in the Great War 1914 to 1918, erected by the citizens of Invercargill with the assistance of the Dominion Band." And so that was opened in October 1928. Then the pergolas, the columns, they were added in 1934, and it was wanted, the people wanted a roof on it, but of course it was about getting the funding. And so the ILT offered to fund it for the King's visit in 1952, but the King was too ill and didn't come in 1952, but instead we had the royal visit of 1954 with Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip.
That's right.
And the ILT gave some extra money, and the Band Rotunda was roofed in 1954 for the royal visit.
Now, we talked about the Henry Egerton Rose Garden, but there's actually two rose gardens in Queen's Park. The other one is the Jessie Calder Garden. And so why did we name that other rose garden after Jessie Calder?
Now, Jessie Calder lived in Winton, and she wanted to give a bequest to be used in Queen's Park, but she didn't trust the councillors to use it, the money, wisely, and so she put a clause in her will that the trustees were to be Laurie Metcalf, who was the present superintendent of the parks, and in the event of him not being the superintendent, it was to be the current superintendent. So she was quite cautious about what she got for her bequest. And it provided an opportunity to extend the roses grown in the park. So it's a formal rose garden with a less formal heath garden on the growing around the outside of it. Construction of the park began in the summer of 1986 to 87, and the first roses were planted in 1987. The garden was officially opened on the 1st of December in 1989. It's one of the largest and most comprehensive collections of roses on public display in New Zealand. So we're very lucky to have that. And we're very lucky that she was quite prescriptive in her bequest.
And they are very different to the roses in the first rose garden. They've all those beautiful old roses in there. And the scent is just quite special.
Yes. And the National Society of Heritage Roses awarded the garden a garden of significant planting a few years ago, about 2005.
I would really encourage everybody over the summer period to get out and walk through our beautiful park.
It is
spectacular.
It is.
And we have many other stories about the park. So we'll come back and do another episode in the new year with that, Wendy, I think. So thanks for listening to Check It Out at Te Haiata, the local history edition, Inawa o Mua on Radio Southland. The show is available to stream as a podcast at radiosouthland.org.nz, and you'll find all of our episodes on the Check It Out page on the library website. So till next time, hei konera.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.